Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shavuos Daf Mem Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Take note that today's shiur will, first of all, begin at the bottom of Daf Mem Beis, Amud Beis. In Mirz Hashem, we plan to learn Daf Mem Gimel, and we will very likely continue on to Daf Mem Dalet and reach Mem Dalet Amud Beis in the context of today's shiur. That means that as far as the Daf Yomi structure, the Daf Yomi Mem Dalet shiur will cover the Mishnah of the new Perek in Mirz Hashem, starting on Daf Mem Dalet Omid Beis, continuing on to Daf Mem Hey Omid Aleph. So we're breaking a little bit from the strict constrictions of Daf Yomi, but that is because of the nature of the sukkis that we will be doing, whereby we cannot break them in the middle with our maximum best advantage in mind. So now, the Gemara itself, we're at the bottom of Mem Beis Amud Beis, a quote from the Mishnah, Shomer Chinom Eino Nishba. On the side of the Gemara, under the Nosei heading, if you're looking, of course, at our marked Gemara, it says, Mokur Be'inyin Shvuas Shomer Chinom, Al Eizid Vorem Chayev Lishova, Al Eizid Vorem Eino Nishba. A Shomer Chinom, an unpaid Bailey, a watchman, given something, an item to watch, and he provides those services free of charge. His responsibilities to compensate if there is any loss to the item exist only in the event that he is negligent. He's a poshea with regard to it. Otherwise, if he says that it was stolen or it got lost, he merely has to swear that that's what happened, and he is exempt from paying. There are situations, and we saw them enumerated in our Mishnah, four cases, Avodim, Shtoros, Karkos, and Hekdeshos, whereby if a Shomer Chinam was charged with them, was watching them, and something happened, and they got stolen or lost, he would not swear. The same will follow with regard to a Nosei Socher, a paid Shomer. He will not have to pay for the theft or the loss of these particular items. What is the basis for these halachas, these laws? That is now what we see in the Gemara. Minohani mili, the Tanu Rabbanan. The Gemara continues at the top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. So from where do we know that which was taught in the Mishnah concerning the Shomer Chinam not having to swear regarding those four items? Karka, Avodim, Shtoros, and Hektish. We quote from Shmos Perichov Beis Pasuk Vav. The Brisa here breaks down the Pasuk into its general statement, the Klal, its Prat, its specific example section, and then a continued general statement, which results in a klal, prat, uklal type posuk. So now in this case, we're not going to be dealing with the subsequent klal, but nevertheless, the Gemara continues. Ki tein ish el reyehu, when someone gives something to his friend, and we understand that is Parshas Shomer Chinam, that equals klal. Kesef o kelim, prat. Kesef, cash, and kelim, vessels, those are examples, specific examples in the pasuk. Lishmor chazar v'kolal. Now, and here we do see, I was wrong before, I mentioned there wasn't a subsequent klal, and here, no, there is. Lishmor, to watch. Watch is a general statement, to watch everything. So the structure here is klal upradu klal. You have a general statement, the opening of the pasuk ki tinesh reu. Then you have the prat, the kesef ukelim, and then the second klal, general statement, iatodon elo kein hapar. If you want to know what the Torah has in mind in this particular section, you focus on the specific examples and look at their nature. Ma haprat mefurosh. Dover hametalta v'gufa mamon, just like the examples in the pasuk kesef and kelim are items that, first of all, they're portable and they have intrinsic value as opposed to representative value. Af kol dover hametalta v'gufa mamon. So too, any other item that has those characteristics. So the laws of the shomer chinam, needing to swear in the event that it got lost or stolen, then the oath applies. Yotsu, to the exclusion of karkois, real estate, Shein Metalton, it's not portable. Yotsu Avodim, we exclude slaves. If a person was given a slave to watch, and something happens, so there will be no oath. Shehukshu Likarkos, the Torah compares slaves, we're talking about heathen slaves, they are compared to land in the Torah, and whatever standard applies to land will apply to Avodim. Yotsu Shtoros, and we also will exclude bills of collection, a shtar chov, that's a document that enables the one holding it to collect money. So it's a portable, but it doesn't have intrinsic value. It's only proof that you can use it to collect money. So that's ein gufon mamon. And likewise, and hektish is excluded by the word re'ehu. In the pasuk we saw, ki'itin ish el re'ehu. Re'ehu means your fellow man, not the Beis Hamikdash. The Beis Hamikdash represents a different realm of activity. So the parsha, the Torah section dealing with Shomer Chinam, doesn't apply to those areas of concern that are not with fellow man. Hektish represents something of a divine, loftier nature. No se socharenu mishalem, a paid bailey, in the event that the item given to him to watch gets lost or stolen, he would have to pay. He's not exempt. He doesn't swear to gain exemption. He has to pay. However, if it's one of these items that we just saw, when it comes to shomer sochar, a paid bailey, which he has his own section in the Torah, it begins with Shmos Perek Chof Beis, Pasuk Tes. And the Pasuk says, Ki yitein ish el re'ehu, klal. Chamor o shor o yiseh, a donkey, an ox, or a lamb, a sheep, prat. Those are specific examples. V'chol behem olishmor, are all kinds of animals to watch. Chozar v'kolal, again a general statement. Kalu pratu klal. V'chulei ad hegdish re'ehu ksiv. Here, the Gemara is basically saving ink, and it's the same method of analysis that we saw just above. Rabbi Meir Omer, yesh tvorim shem kikarka v'einon kikarka. Rabbi Meir spoke in the Mishnah about vines that had clusters of grapes on them. A person had entrusted 10 vines to an individual, who had given 10 vines to an individual and then expected them to be returned, and the other fellow said, no, there were only 5. So that I don't owe you 10, I owe you only 5. Rabbi Meir said, under circumstances like that, a shvua needs to be taken. Even though we learned that land is something that's excluded from the realm of vows. But here you're dealing with vines that are laden with clusters of grapes. Now the Gemara. Michlal de Rabbi Meir Savar, it would seem that we would infer or conclude from this Mishnah, kol ha-mechuba l'karka, eino kikarka. that anything that's attached to the ground is not like the ground. Well, if that's the case, adimifligi betunos, lifligi besukos, instead of arguing about laden vines, why not present their argument with vines without clusters? Srukos, srak, srak is empty, something that is, vines that aren't bearing any fruits. The Gemara responds, we'll just add a couple words here, and that is that basically mechuba lekarka, according to everybody, including Rebbe Meir, is kekarka. Omar Rebbe Yossi, Rebbe Chanina, hacha va'anovim oimdos libotzer kamifligi. Here we're talking about a very specific situation. The vines that are attached to the ground have clusters of grapes that are fully ripe. Oimdos libotzer means they're ready for harvesting. The Rebbe Meir savar kibitzus damyan. Rebbe Meir looks at them as if they have already been harvested, as if they've been separated from the plant, from the vine. And as such, you have straightforward metaltalin, portable items. They're not ground. They're not related to the ground anymore. Rabbanan Savri, the Rabbanan look at the way it is right now, even though they're fully ripe. Lo kibitzuras damyan. They're not viewed as if already harvested. And hence, they fall under the general exemption from oath as applies to real estate or land-based items. Ein shboin elo al davar shebemida v'shebemishkal v'chulei. We have diamonds that appear in the Gemara, highlighting Abaye and later Rava. On the side of Gemara, under the Nosei, topic heading, Mivneh, structural note, we read as follows, Machlokes Abaye v'Rava, b'to'arno, we'll see a difference of opinion between Abaye and Rava, where a claim is put into is put forward to somebody, where he says, this house full with whatever, grain. House full of grain. Is that considered a claim of something with a stated quantity? Benigud in contrast, l'toyano gadol u'moydeloy b'kotten, she'eno nechshav moyde b'miktsas. This is in contrast to, let us say, someone puts a claim in for a large item, and the one claimed from admits to owing a small item. Large and small represent two different elements. And as we've learned in the past, in order for an oath to be generated, the admission has to be a part of the original claim, not when the admission is a different entity. We'll call that, in English, we often use the term apples and oranges. In the Gemara, we've seen the example, chitim u'sa'irim, with the exception, of course, of Shitas Rabbi Gamliel, which we are not focusing on. So we're trying to establish what are the criteria for something, a taina and a haidah of a dovar shebeminyan. And as we said, just to repeat the main point, that an oath is generated when the admission is a part of a part or a lesser amount than the original claim that was stated in measurable terms. Mida, mishkal, minyan, can say measurable terms, versus the expressions large and small. Omar Abaye, we continue in the Gemara, lo shonu, elo diomar le baye stam. Aval omar le baye ze mole yedio tanose. We saw in the Mishnah that no oath would be generated unless it's something that has that something is measurable, davar shebemida shebeminyan, or mida mishkal uminyan, and our Mishnah gave an example where there would be an exemption, and that was if someone said, "I gave you a bayis moly, a house full of whatever, a house full of grain," and that's called a type of claim. So Abaye says that the exemption mentioned in the Mishnah is where the claim was by a stam. By the way, in the Mishnah, which taught the case of exemption, it had said, I gave you, the claim was, I gave you bias mole mosatiloch, and the fellow responded, he says, I don't know about that, but whatever you gave me to watch, here it is, take it back. So, since the claim was simply bias mole, it's too general a claim. It doesn't leave room for, let's say, defining the partial admission on the part of the one being collected from. However, Avol, the Gemara continues, Avol Omar Le Bayis Ze Mole, this house full of grain, Yedio Tanose, then his claim is clearly defined. I see the house referred to, this house, and I understand that he's asking to have returned to him this house full. Rashi, on the upper part of the narrow lines, Yudia Tanose, the Kevan Yomar Le Bayeze Mole, since the claimer said that, Veze Machzira Lo Chasera, and the one being claimed from returns it to him, but missing, incomplete, not full with grain, Nire Chesrona. It's an obvious, you can see what's missing, you can see the amount that's missing. Vare Hu It's like a case where a person claimed that I gave you a house full of items of grain until the window, and the admission was no, only until the ziz, the protrusion, which is, we'll just assume for illustration purposes, it's a lesser amount. The Gemara continues. Omar le Rava ihachi. If that would have been a good example of a claim with an admission that would result in a shvua, so Aditoni Seifa, instead of the Seifa teaching me a very specific situation, Zeomer Ad Aziz, Vezeomer Ad HaChalon, Chayov, where one says, I gave you until the Ziz. And here, we'll switch around the example that we mentioned before. I gave you until the ziz, that it was full until the ziz, that was a greater amount than what's being admitted to. And he says, and I know what you gave me was only until the chalon, only until the window, which is a smaller amount. Liflog velisne bidida. Without getting into specific elements of the house defining the quantity, you could have stayed within the original example and shown a distinction as follows. Bamed vamumurim, when is there no shvua? When you say bayis mole, avol bayis ze mole, chayov. Without getting into such specific detail as ziz and chalon, a balcony protrusion versus window, you could have stayed within the realm of a house full I gave you and just make the distinction within that example. If you say a house full, that wouldn't be a sufficiently clear claim. If you say this house full, that would have been a sufficiently clear claim if Abaye is correct, but the Mishnah didn't teach that. Eloma Rova, Lioilom Eino Chayev Achit Ainunu, Bedover Shebemida, Veshebishko, Veshebeminyan. Vyoidolo, Bedover Shebemida, Veshebemishko, Veshebeminyan. Rova says that the example that Abaye gave by saying this house full is still not in concurrence with the standard required. The standard is that the claim must be something that is measurable. You can, for example, if the balcony is clear, it's, let's say it's 10 feet off the ground, the window is 4 feet off the ground, that would be in the realm of Dobor Shebemito, something that can be measured. But simply saying this house full, it's not a clear statement of measure. And therefore, Rava disagrees with what Abaye mentioned. Tanyo Kavosei de Rava. Here we have a long point as well. We have a Tanaic source that is supportive of what Rava says. Kur tvua li biyadcha valomer ein l'cha biyadi. Potter. Person claims you have a measure of grain that you owe me. A measure is, in this case, the kur is an amount, and the fellow denies totally, says, I don't have anything of yours, I don't owe you anything. Potter, he's exempt. Menorah gedola yeshli biyadcha. You owe me a large candelabra, and the fellow responds, ein l'cha biyadi ela menorah tana. All I owe you is a small candelabra, potter, that is exempt. Ezora gdolo yeshli biyadcha, an ezora is a belt. You owe me a large belt. Ein l'cha biyadi ela ezora tana. All I owe you is a small one, potter. So we have here three examples of exemption. And you see from here, the first example was a case of kofer bakol. Examples 2 and 3 were claims of large, admission of small, also resulting in tur. Large and small are not defined quantities. Avol, omar lo kur tvur yesh li biyadcha, valomer ein lecha biyadi ela lesech. If the claim was for an entire full kur of tvua, and the admission was a lesech, a lesser amount than a kur, that's a partial confession, partial admission, chayav, that results in an oath. Menorah bas etzer litrin yesh li biyadcha, and here the claim is for a candelabra measuring or having the weight of 10 liter, and the fellow admits, ein lecha biyadi ela bas chamesh litrin, all I owe you is one of 5 litrin, chayav, that does generate a shvua. Klolo shel davar, the principle that comes forth from this source, lo lemeinu chayav atshenu b'davar shemiru shemishko v'sheb'minyan, v'yodolo b'davar shebemiro v'shebemishko v'sheb'minyan. A shvua is not generated unless the original claim is something stated in measurable terms, whether it's size measure, weight measure, or unit measure, countable, minion, some number of units, and likewise the admission is stated in the same terms. Klolo shel davar, the phrase in this source that we dashed underline, lasuye mai, what else is being included? Lav lasuye bayezemole, is it not in fact coming to include that kind of claim, namely that bayezem mole does not represent a well-defined, quantifiable type claim, and therefore, as Rava said, bayezem mole would not generate a shvua. Now, the Gemara analyzes the examples in this source. We have a triangle marking scheme on the side of the Gemara under the Mivneh heading, which we call the Ma'akav, the attempt to keep track. We have a triangle with the point facing up, upwards, that represents Kushio's questions, and the inverted triangle, Chuvos' responses. The Gemara, Umay Shna Menorah Gedola Umenorah Ketana. What is different about that? That we say there's exemption based on the following. A claim was for a large candelabra, and the admission was for a small candelabra that is considered in the eyes of halacha as something along the lines of wheat and barley, which we've seen before. If I claim you owe me wheat and you admit that you owe me barley, that does not generate a shvua, because what was claimed was that not that which was admitted, and that which was admitted was not that which was claimed. So if gedola and ketana fall into that category, ihachi bas eser bas chomesh nami mashetana lo hoydolo mashetana lo tanoi. If you state it in even if you state it in quantifiable terms, but a 10 litra menorah is a large one, and the admission of a 5-litre menorah, that's admitting a small one. So why in that case does the source indicate that does generate an oath? Omar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak. This is the first of two attempts to answer this question. So Rav Shmuel says, Hocha b'menor shochu yisaskinon, deka moida le mina. The source features a menorah made of chulios. Chulios are discs or couplets that you can assemble and disassemble. So therefore, essentially, a menorah that's 10 litra is simply a menorah that has more of the chulios units that construct it. So it's considered a claim of a large amount and an admission. When he admits 5 litra, it's simply a candelabra made of fewer of those very same elements. So that's no different than asking for 10, you owe me 10 pounds of wheat, and I admit I owe you 5 pounds of wheat, and that would generate a shvua. Well, ihachi, if that's the case, a zoronami nisni, if you look carefully in our source, the last frame source, a zorah, the belt example, appeared in the first half of the source where there was shvua exemption. But in the second half of the source where you saw Roman numeral number 2, there were only two examples. You didn't see the Azora appearing there in the section of the source that mentioned a shvua, an oath obligation. So if you're going to say that regarding the menorah, that the shvua obligation, the oath obligation is generated because you're dealing there with menorahs that are made of chulios, of couplets, then you could have used the same type example when it came to the belt. And here the Gemara forwards its suggestion. Well, if Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchok's explanation is accurate, then with regard to the Ezora as well, Nisni, it could have been taught in section Roman numeral number 2, and then state a third example of a Chiyuv Shvuva Lukmi B'Dalaifi, and teach it in terms of a belt that is made of, we'll say, loops or links that are sewn together. Let's take a look at Rashi. A Zora Nami Lisni, a Zora Bas Eser Amos, a belt 10 Amos long. Yesh Li B'Yodcha, you owe me a belt of that length. V'alo Omerin L'cha B'Yodi Elo Bas Chomesh. No, I owe you only a 5 Amo long belt. Chayov. And let's state that as being chayav in a shvua, obligated to swear, velukma, and explain, set it up, be'ezora bas chatichos harbe, a belt made of many small pieces, velaifi ahadodi betfiras machat, and each couplet, each link is sewn together, forming the belt. But the source didn't teach that. Ela delaifi lo katani. The source is not interested in teaching belts made like that. Well, then hochanami b'shel chulios lo katani. And by the same token, the description of the menorah in that fashion is also not something that the source is teaching, thereby rejecting Rav Shmuel's explanation. Well, that brings us back to the question. If you're telling me that menorah gdola and menorah ktana does not generate a shvua, so why does bas eser litrin and bas chomesh litrin, yes, generate a shvua? Elo amar Rabbi Abba bar Momol, shiny menorah. The menorah is different than a case of a belt. Hoyil v'yochel gura lamido al chomesh litrin. A large menorah, menorah candelabra, let's assume it's made of metal. If it's 10 litrin, you can file it down. You can file that very same complete menorah, not a menorah made of pieces, one solid menorah. You could file it down, gorah is to rub it or file it down, and make it a thinner, lesser weight entity. And it would then weigh, after filing it, 5 litrin. And that could not be, and it would still be a functional menorah. That same thing could not be done with a zorah, with a belt, because what are you going to suggest? You have a complete long belt. Cut the ends off to make it shorter, but that is clearly then a different entity. It's not simply a smaller, as Rashi says, if you were to do that, Rosheha Nikor, and then the tips would be visibly tampered with. Not so in the case of a menorah that's simply filed down. Instead of having, let's say, thick branches, it would have then thin branches. But it would still appear as a complete entity, just with less weight to it. But I emphasize it would still appear as a complete entity as opposed to a cut belt. The Mishnah. Before we read the Mishnah, on the side we have a topic heading, Malveh al Hamashkoin v'nevad. A loan is extended in exchange for collateral. So a lender gives money to a borrower, and the borrower presented the lender with a mashkon. Malveh v'loy v'cholkin kama hoy seshova. And we'll see now in our Mishnah controversy that arises between the lender and the borrower with regard to the value of the mashkon. And once again, we're talking about a case where the mashkon was lost. Hamalveh es chavero al hamashkon. Someone lends his friend money in exchange for collateral. V'yavad hamashkon, and the mashkon got lost. In other words, the mashkon was in the possession of the lender and it got lost. In the Mishnah, you'll notice we have a number of different cases, different kinds of claims, different claims, and who initiates the claims. You'll see we've broken the Mishnah down using Roman numerals. Immediately you see Roman numeral 1. 3 lines later, you'll see a Roman numeral number 2. And under each one of these numbers, 1 and 2, we will have Aleph and Beis, 2 cases within each one. We'll have then a total of 4 cases. Omar Loi, the Malveh, who is claiming payment, says, Selahil Visicholov, Vishekil Hoyeshova. Maybe it's worth noting, and we have a little list on the side, there's a little starred note on the side, which you can see one Selah, it's a coin, equals 2 shekel, which in turn equals 4 dinars. So there are 4 dinar coins that make up one Selah coin. If you, American terms, $1 has 4 quarters to it, and 2 half dollars to it. A half dollar has 2 quarters in it. So here we have Selah, Shekel, and Dinar. The Tovea, the Malveh in this case, the Malveh is claiming, I loaned you a Selah. In exchange for the Mashkon that you gave me. And that Mashkon, however, was worth 1 Shekel. So that you still owe me, even though I lost the mashkon, you still are chayav to me a shekel. Basically, I lost half the value of the loan, but there remains another half outstanding that you still owe me. V'halo omer, the love, the borrower says loki elo sela hilvisani olav sela hoya shove. You loaned me a selah, but the mashkon that I gave you was worth a selah. I owe you nothing. This is a fellow who's kofer bakol, total denial. And, as we've seen many times up till now, total denial, potter. No shvua, no oath. We continue with another opening example, just like example Aleph. Selah hilvisi cholov v'shekil hoyashoveh. I loaned you a selah of money, and the collateral that I lost was worth half of that. V'halomer, and here now you'll see a difference. Lo ki, not so, says the lova in response. Elo selah visani olav, you loaned me a selah. U'shloisha dirnim hoya shaveh. The mashkon that you lost was not worth half the loan, it was worth 3/4 of the loan. Therefore, I owe you only 1/4 of the loan. Chayav. So you see, partial admission. the Malva was asking for 50% of the original loan to be paid back, and the Lova was saying, no, I owe you only 25% of the original loan. That's called Modeh B'Mitzvah, partial admission, and hence a Shavua. Sela, and here we have a new section of the Mishnah, Roman numeral number 2. Note the change in the opening speaker. The Lova, the borrower who is the owner of the Mashkon, he ends up, as you'll see shortly, he ends up being the Toveya. He is the one who is laying a claim, because what he did is he gave a very expensive Mashkon worth more than the loan that he received altogether. So, as we said, Sela Hilvisani Olov, note, the Lova, the borrower is speaking, and he says, you loaned me a Sela, and I gave you a Mashkon, Ushtayim HaYeshav, the Mashkon that I gave you was worth 2 Sela. So, what is the Lova asking for? He's asking, you lost my expensive Mashkon, you owe me a Sela. V'halo Omer, and the Malva says, lo ki, not so. Elo Sela hu visicha lov, I loaned you a Sela, v'sela hoyoshtove, and it was altogether worth 1 Sela, the amount that I loaned you. I don't owe you anything. Potter, he's kofer bakol, he is exempt from swearing. Again, Beis is the same opening as example Aleph. Sela hu visani olav ushtayim hoyoshtove, the Lova is claiming that the Malva owes him 1 Sela, Valo Omer. The Malva says in response, Lo ki, Elo Sela Hovisicholov, I loaned you a Sela, and you gave me a Mashkon. It's true, the Mashkon was worth more than the loan, but V'chamisha Dinrim Hoyoshava, it was worth 5 Dinrim, in other words, Sela and a quarter. So I owe you 1 Dinar, which is a quarter of a Sela, I owe you. You're asking for me a full Sela, I owe you only a quarter of a Sela. Chayav, he is Chayav to swear, he is Modeh B'Mitzas. And now we have a phrase that closes the Mishnah. This phrase is unclear at this point. We'll read it, but wait for the Gemara to deal with it. Umi nishba, who swears how much that mashkon was worth? Answer, misha pikodon etzlo. Pikodon is the entrusted item. The entrusted item in this case is the mashkon, the one who's holding on to the mashkon. Shemo Ishovazeh, we are afraid if not that, if the Malva would not be the one swearing, but rather the Love, if he were to swear, he might swear an amount, that it's worth a certain amount, the Yotzi Halo Es HaPikadon, and the Malva will whip out the Mashkon and show demonstrate the Love to be a liar. The Rashi says, V'yotzi halo es hapikodon v'shem alo dikteik ze b'shuma, and it might be that the Lova wasn't careful with his assessment. V'fselenu li'edu z'lishvua, and by the Malva pulling out the Mashkon, showing him, the Lova, to be inaccurate, to be a teller of falsehoods, would then render him unfit to serve as a witness or to swear. We continue on Omid Beis, and immediately the Gemara is interested in that last phrase. So that as far as the examples of the Mishnah, the Gemara is not focusing on that. Rather, the closing phrase, Ahei. The end of the Mishnah is referring to what section of the Mishnah. In other words, we had 4 examples of claims and admissions, or claims and responses. What is the last phrase referring to? Before we read further in the Gemara, let us point out that when the Gemara answers the question of who is to swear, it gave an answer that if you're really very, very sensitive to language and to Mishnayos literature, You understand that the closing of the Mishnah was an explanation that we would say is of a rabbinic nature. In other words, we want so-and-so to swear and not the other guy because of what might happen. That style is, I would say, rabbinic in nature, as opposed to an oath, a shvua, that would be based on letter of the law, something that is Torah mandated, not something that's based on what might happen. With that brief introduction, we'll appreciate the Gemara a little bit more. On the side, by the way, we have a nosei, topic heading, the nosei which reads, Birur al-makoi seifa mishnah, where clarification here, what is the end of the Mishnah referring to? Umi nishba, misha pikonon etzlo, shemo yishova zev yotzi aloha sapikonon. That closing phrase, what is it referring to? The Gemara now continues. In lema, aseifa. If you were to think that it's going on Roman numeral number 2, case bays. In other words, the very last example of claim before that closing phrase. In simple terms, if you were to read the Mishnah straightforward, the last line of the Mishnah is simply a continuation of Roman numeral number 2, case bays. Let's go over Roman numeral number 2, case bays in the Mishnah. We have the Lova saying, you owe me a full selah. The Malve is Moide Bemiktas. He says, I owe you only a quarter of a selah. And then the Mishnah says, well, who is to swear regarding the value of the Mashkon, which would clarify then what's owed? So, if you're going to say that closing phrase of the Mishnah is a reference to Roman numeral number 2, case bays, the Malve is swearing not because if the Lover were to swear, the Malve would end up making him look bad. No! The Malve is swearing because that's the letter of the law. He has to swear. He is a Moide Bemiktas. So now, let's read this in the words of the Gemara. So, if you think that the closing line of the Mishnah is a continuation of the Seifa of the end of the Mishnah, case Roman numeral number 2, case Beis, the tapuk lay the shvua gabi malvehu. Regardless of what might happen with the Mashkon, the Malve has to swear anyway by letter of the law. He is a Modeh B'miktas in that case. And it's an oath, Me'ikur Hadin, by letter of law, not because of a gzeira of what might happen. Omar Shmuel Aresha, V'chein Omar Abchir Barav, Ash Barav Aresha, V'chein Omar Rabbi Yochanan Aresha. Oh, you have three names here all saying that the last phrase, in fact, is not a mere continuation of the last example of the Mishnah, but it's a throwback to something earlier in the Mishnah. My Resha. Well, early in the Mishnah, we had three other cases before the fourth case. So what do you mean, Resha? What part of the Mishnah? Answer, Seifa de Resha. Well, with our markings, it makes life so much easier. Seifa de Resha will be Roman numeral number 1, case Beis. And here the Gemara quotes it. Sela hilvisicha lov. The Malve says, I loaned you a Sela. The shekel hoyeshava, and the mashkon was worth a shekel, half of the loan. And I lost it, okay, but you still owe me a shekel. V'halo omer, and the lova says, lo ki natso, eloselo visani olov, v'shloisha dinrim hoyeshava, chayov. The lova admits that he still owes, but not as much as the lova. Malva was claiming, I owe you not a shekel, I owe you half that amount, I owe you only a dinar. The Lova is Modeh B'miktas. The Lova is Chayav. He is the one that should be swearing. The Shvua Gabi Loivahi. The Shvua, by letter of the law, is upon the Lova. The Lova is the one that's supposed to be swearing to confirm his claim. Vishakluha. Now I dashed underline Shakluha. This is the idea of moving the Shvua. This is rabbinic intervention. The Shakluha Rabbonon mi loive, the Shadua Malve. The Rabbonon, the rabbis, took the removed the shvua from the lova and placed it upon the malveh. So what you have here then is, as we said, is it's rabbinic involvement so as to prevent the situation described. That imagine the lova is the one that has to swear, and why? What is he saying? He says, I'm swearing that the I owe you only a dinar because the mashkon that I gave you was worth 3/4 of a sela. Oh, if he were to swear thusly, the malve could whip out the mashkon, and he might whip it out. And it's true, he seemed to claim that it was lost, but we're afraid maybe he'll find it, he'll whip it out, and then make the lova look really bad. So we took the shvua from the lova and placed it upon the malve. The Gemara continues, V'hashta di'omar Rav Ashi. And now that Rav Ashi in Maseches Bava Metzia, here the Gemara is very terse, it's basing itself on, we'll say, known information from Maseches Bava Metzia. Now that Rav Ashi has established the Kaimalon Ze Nishba She'eno Birshuso, V'ze Nishba Kama Shaveh, when an article was given to a shomer to watch, and he claims that it was lost or stolen, if it was a shomer chinam. The law, according to Rav Ashi, is because we're afraid of the possibility of a shomer, even if he doesn't swear that it was lost or stolen, a shomer might very well take the approach, you know what, I don't want to swear, I'll pay you for it. But even so, the rabbis are suspect that the shomer made off with it. True, he's willing to pay for it, but still that's wrong to forcefully make off with other people's items even though they're willing to pay for it. So Rav Ashi says in Maseches Bava Metzia, Ze nishba she'eino birshuso. The shomer swears that he doesn't have it at all. Veze nishba kama shava. And the owner then swears how much it was worth. If we look in Rashi, on the top line, Vehashtadam Rav Ashi, Ze nishba, Veze nishba, Hochikam Rami nishba tchila, Ha de Rav Ashi bava metzia hu perka mafkin. What Rav Ashi says here is found in the third parak of Bava Metzia. D'yom Rav Huna ha'sam gabi shomer sofer shetan nignava. In that case, what I said was a slightly inaccurate, but Rav Huna there speaks about a shomer sofer, a paid bailey who claims that the item was stolen. Now, when a paid bailey says it was stolen, he's obligating himself to pay. That's admitting I owe you because that's my obligation as a paid bailey. We impose on that shomer sachar a shvua. He has to swear that he doesn't have it. Why? We're afraid he became envious of it or desirous of it and wants it for himself, and he's willing to pay money. The oisvine. And we then ask on Rav Huna, Meha dekotoni, from our Mishnah, V'yotzi halo es hapikodon. In our Mishnah, we saw the malve, were fearful of the malve bringing forth the entrusted item, the mashkon. The amris, if what you, Rav Huna, are saying is correct, Mashvino yisei shvua sheino birshuso, that the malve in our case, who's the equivalent of the shomer, has to swear he doesn't have it, hechi motzi mapik lei, once he swears he doesn't have it, how's he going to pull it out? Vishoni Ravashi Allah, and Ravashi explains our Mishnah there in Bava Metzia, ze nishba ve ze nishba. In fact, both swear. Ze nishba the malva swears she'eino birshuso. He has to swear that it's not in his possession. Ze shehashvua olav nishba kama hoyis shaveh. And the Love, who was Mode Bemitzas. He swears what he had to swear as a Mode Bemitzas. No shvuos were removed from him. V'hochi Kamar Masnisen. Our Mishnah here in Maseches Shvuos, the bottom line of Omid Aleph, which said Umi Nishba, you know what it means? Mi Nishba Tchila. Who is the first one to swear in this double oath situation? Answer, who swears first? Mi Shapikodon Etzlo, Nishba Tchila, Sheino Bershuso. The Malve swears that he doesn't have it. Ula Oilom Asefa Dereshukoi. And as the Gemara had answered, the last line of the Mishnah is attached to the end of the Resha, namely Roman numeral 1, case base, Hecha de Shvua Gabi Love, where the Shvua is upon the Love. So now that we've read the Rashi, we go back to the Gemara, reading again from the beginning of the line, Vahashta de Yomar Avashi, the Kaimalon Zen Nishba She'eno Birshusa Vezen Nishba Kama Shove, Hochi Ka'omar. Once we've established that the shomer has to swear that he doesn't have the item, and then the owner swears how much the item was worth, we then transpose that information, superimpose it on our Mishnah, which now Hochi Kama reads thusly, Mi Nishba Tchila. The Mishnah's question at the bottom of Omid Aleph was, who swears first? We have a Malve and a Love. Answer, Misha Pikon and Etzlo. The Malve swears first that he doesn't have it. Shemo Yishovazeh V'yotzi halo es ha-pikodon. Imagine the Love would swear first how much it was worth, and then the Malve would have a chance to whip out the pikadon without the mashkon making the lova look really bad. Now, let us add a major point. We mentioned it in our explanation, but we didn't focus on it. According to Rav Ashi, there is no removal of the shvua from the one who's moide b'miktas. According to the Gemara's approach before Rav Ashi, and if you notice, we had dashed underlined the word v'shakluha. There, the Gemara said that the Rabbanan removed the shvua from the Love who was Moda Mitzas and put it on the Malve. That, according to Rav Ashi, that's not happening whatsoever. Rav Ashi introduced the double shvua element, and as we explained, all the Mishnah was interested in at the bottom when it asked Umi Nishba means who swears first. And the answer to that is the Malve will swear first, making it very clear that he doesn't have the Mashkon, it truly was lost, and then the Love, who was Mode B'Miktsas, swears in accordance with the Torah law of a Mode B'Miktsas, and he'll swear how much it was worth, indicating that he owes 25% of the original loan as opposed to 50% that was being demanded of him. As you can see, we have a slash mark, which indicates a new trend of thought. A firebox appears, which indicates also a point that will hold us for quite a long discussion. On the side of the Gemara, you'll notice a nosei, and we indicate ad mem dalet amid beis, a rather long discussion, page-wise. You see the bow tie shape featured. These represent nisyonos, attempts, leha'amid kemachloikis tanoim, dino shel Shmuel, to set up Shmuel's teaching as if it were a machloikis tanoim. This particular marking, I might have jumped the gun a little bit, but before we deal with that, we should first go back to the topic heading before the bow tie marking, just a few lines above, a few inches above on the Gemara side. You see the triangle that represents Sholosh Deis, three opinions, Be'inyin Kabolas Mashkoin Simli Tmuras Halvo Gdoila. Umahadin Nevad Oisei Mashkon. Three opinions regarding a lender who receives from a borrower a symbolic type mashkon. A mashkon is translated, maybe it's a mistranslation, but it's translated often as a collateral. There's an item of collateral in exchange for the loan, for extending the loan. So the malve, prior to receiving payback of the loan, he receives a mashkon from the love. In this Gemara, we'll be talking about a symbolic mashkon, namely a mashkon whose value is only symbolic, far less than the actual value of the loan. We will learn about the malva losing that symbolic mashkon. What effect does that have on his ability to collect the loan? Later, as we said, when we made reference to the bow tie marking, you can see a little bit further down, there's an attempt on the part of the Gemara here on Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis, and later again on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Beis, to set up Shmuel's point of view as a machlokes tanoim. We'll get back to that shortly. Let's now turn to the Gemara. We pick up with the fireboxed Omar Shmuel. Haiman de Oisfe Alpha Zuzi Lechavre. One who loans $1,000 to his friend. Umishken le kata de magla. And the borrower offered in exchange the handle of an axe handle. Piece of wood, an axe handle. Ovad kata de magla, ovad alpha zuzi. Shmuel says that if the lender loses that axe handle, he loses the loan. He won't be able to collect his loan. Avoltarti katoi lo. But if two axe handles were given in exchange for that loan, and he would lose one of them, then we don't say that he loses the ability to collect the loan. Before going any further, we look at Rashi together. Ovar Alpha Zuzi, the Sovar Vekobil. This lender agreed. He agreed to take this nominal value collateral in exchange for the loan. Avol Kozman Shehen Kayomen. And here, this is a very, very significant point. As long as this nominal type collateral is extant, is around, Al Korche Goiva Choivoi, the lender will by force be able to collect the loan. Im Malve Stamhu. If you're talking about an undefined length of time loan, stam milveh 30 days, namely 30 days later, the lender can say, "Listen, take back your axe handle. I want my money." The imperial shlo zman kishiyagia zmano yifra, and if it's a defined time loan, if it's a loan for half a year, so when a half a year arrives, the lender goes to the borrower and says, "Give me back my loan." The lo motzi lemeimar, the love cannot say to the malva, "Savris v'kabilis, hey, listen, you know, you took the axe handle as mashkon, you keep the axe handle, and I'm not paying back the loan." Though he received it as collateral, he didn't receive it as a means or an alternative means of payment of the loan. The cave on the kible l'shem mashkon, and since the lender accepted it as a mashkon, not as payment, kol kamadula mahadir le mashkone, as long as the mashkon is not returned, however, lo govi, he cannot collect his loan. Velo motzi poter nafshe b'demei shavyon. nor, and this is very significant to Shmuel's point of view, nor can the lender say, okay, I don't have your axe handle, but it'll take its value, but give me the rest of my loan. Nope. He has to give back the axe handle in order to get his loan. This is what's unique to receiving it as a mashkon, that we call a toras mashkon. We also saw in the Gemara, we continue in the Rashi, avoltarti kato, but if the lender received two axe handles, lo amrinon, we do not say, according to Shmuel, there are those that disagree, but according to Shmuel, we do not say chada kobo b'chomesh mea v'chada b'chomesh mea, that each axe handle is 500 of the 1,000 loan. V'i ovid chada minayo lo lipsit chomesh mea. And if one of them is lost, we don't say that he loses 500 of the loan. D'ha lo porish chada b'palga v'chada b'palga. It was never spelled out in the case that he would have received two axe handles, that each one corresponds to half the loan. Ela travayu kablinu bechado b'mashkona v'lo b'biron. Both were accepted by the lender as mashko, not as payment. The kevon demahadu le'mitzas mashkono b'may dechosu minei poter nafshe b'tashlumei shavyo. Where he returns half or part of the mashkon, in that case, he, the lender, can get away with simply subtracting from the amount collected the value of the other axe handle. Now, we continue in the Gemara with a second opinion, second triangle. For Rav Nachman Omar, afilu tarti katoi, even when you're dealing with two axe handles, ovid chad, ovid chomesh me, ovid idoch, ovid kulei. If he loses one of them, he loses 500 of the 1,000 loan, and if he loses the other one, he loses the entire loan. Avol katovenaskolo. If, however, the mashkon presented to the lender were two different items, an axe handle and a bar of silver, nasko, bar of silver, then Rav Nachman will concede we don't analyze as we did with the two axe handles. The Rashi, Avokato v'nasko, the lower part of the Rashi, says, lo amrinon, we don't say nasko kobil b'palga, the kevon demidi dechozi purunhu, lo kible ole, el b'deme shavyo. Since the nasko is an item that is, as Rashi says, midi dechazit pronon, something that could be used to pay back. It's almost like currency. We say that the lender had accepted that as a means of paying back the loan, so that if it's lost, only its value is what has to be reckoned with. We continue with the third opinion, Nahardoi Amri, afilu kata v'nasko, even when the mashkon is an axe handle and a bar of silver, ovad nasko, ovad palgo, ovad kata, ovad kule. If the lender loses the bar of silver, he loses half the loan, and if he loses the axe handle, he loses the rest of it and will not be able to collect any of it. The Gemara now raises a question. In our Mishnah, a mashkon was lost, and the malva says, "Selah v'sicha lo v'shekel lo yeshava." I loaned you a selah, and the mashkon you gave me was worth a shekel, was worth half the loan. V'halo omer lo ki elo selah v'sani lo v'shlosh dinrim ho yeshava. Lova says, "Yes, you loaned me a selah, but the mashkon was worth 3/4 of the loan, and hence I owe you only a quarter, not half of the loan." And the Mishnah ruled, Chayav, he has to swear, Lay mole, why doesn't the love say, Ha kabilte? You lost the mashkon, that's it, I don't owe you anything. According to the opinions we saw here, Shmuel said if someone loaned money and received a mashkon in exchange, and if he loses the mashkon, he loses the chance to collect the debt. Here in the Mishnah, he lost the mashkon, and yet he is still collecting the debt, part of the debt. The Gemara answers, Masnisin b'deporish, Shmuel b'deloporish. Rashi, second line from the bottom, b'deporish, eini mekablo alai elo b'achrayas domov b'shavyo. In the Mishnah, we're speaking about a lender who accepted the mashkon, but stipulated, I'm accepting this mashkon only with regard to its actual value. In Shmuel's case, that wasn't stipulated, and hence, the mashkon took on a much greater significance. Now, we have the bow tie. We started making reference to this earlier. Notice that this is Roman numeral number one. If you can, it's always advisable to scan ahead to Mem Daled Amud Beis, and you'll notice six lines from the top, at the beginning of the line, Lemo Ketanoi, and there Shmuel, there once again the Gemara says, let us say that Shmuel's teaching is the subject of a Machlokes Tanoim. Rashi, there on Mem Daled Beis, says, Lemo Kihani Tanoi, Ha de Shmuel. Now, when you get to that point in the Gemara, it might not be so clear what Rashi is referring to, but with the marking system, it's very, very clear. By the way, if you don't have a marked Gemara, you can access a marked Gemara by contacting gmarkings@gmail.com. On the side, we have written, we started reading this before, the bowtie shape appears, Nisyon Islami Kamachlokis Tanoi Dino Shel Shmuel, attempt on the part of the Gemara to set up Shmuel's teaching as a Machlokes Tanoim. The Malve Ibeid HaMashkon Afilu Im Hu Simli, if the Malve loses the Mashkon, even if it's symbolic, Ibeid as Kol Alvavlu Yuchal Ligvo Yischovon, he won't be able to collect his debt. So now the Gemara. Leimo Ketanoi. Can we say that Shmuel's teaching is a Machlokes Tanoim? And this is essentially a long question taking you to the second line from the top of Daf Mem Daled. Hamalve is chaver al amashkon v'over amashkon. Person lent his friend money in exchange for a mashkon, collateral. Mashkon got lost. Yishava v'yitol es mois of divrei Eliezer. The malve can swear. The malve who lost the mashkon can swear and collect his debt. Rashi says at the bottom, Yishava v'yitol ma'isov, Yishava she'ovad v'yitol eschovo. This, by the way, is reminiscent of a shomer chinam who has the right to swear an unpaid bailey given an item, entrusted to watch an item, loses it. The Torah gives him the option to swear that it got lost, and he is exempt from paying. He is free from paying. So here you have the Malveh. Okay, he swears it got lost. And that doesn't affect his ability to collect the loan. That certainly does not sound like Shmuel. Rabbi Kiva Imer, Yochel hu shiyomar lo, klum ilvisani, elo ala mashkon. The Loveh can say, is it not so that you loan me the money only because of the mashkon, in exchange for the mashkon, over the mashkon, of the mo'osecha. You lost the mashkon, so you lose the chance to collect from me your debt. Now we dashed underline of the mo'osecha. This is the opinion that appears to be like Shmuel. Avol hamalve elev zuz b'shtar v'niach mashkon b'yado divrei hakol ovad hamashkon ovdu ma'oisov. However, if a loan of 1,000 zuz was extended and it was recorded in a document so that it's a milveh b'shtar, That means the malve, in exchange for the extended loan, extending the loan, he receives a document. And in addition to that, he received a mashkon. Everyone will agree, meaning even Rabbi Eliezer will agree, that if the mashkon is lost, the chance to collect the loan is also lost. Heichi domi. Gemara wants to know now, what are the circumstances, what are the details? By the way, up till now, when we were dealing with Shmuel, the sugi was dealing with what we termed a symbolic mashkon. Namely, a mashkon not worth the value of the loan. So now, what's the story in this Tanaic source? Ibedeshavi shiur zuzi. If you're talking about a mashkon, the collateral that was worth the actual loan, we continue at the top of the Mem Dalet. My time made the Rebbe Eliezer. What would be the reasoning behind the opinion of Rebbe Eliezer that says that the Malva can still collect, he can swear and collect his money? For goodness sakes, he lost the mashkan, which was the value of the entire loan. Elolav bidolo shovi shiur zuzi. It's a symbolic type mashkan, not worth the value of the loan. Ubedishmuel komifligi. And the point of controversy between Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Akiva is Shmuel. Namely, Rebbe Akiva accepts Shmuel, and Rebbe Eliezer does not accept that approach. The diamonds on the side are explained under the Mivneh heading, and these diamonds are a marking that continued till Amud Beis. Nisyonis lahasbir machloikis Rebbe Akiva, Rebbe Eliezer Rebbe Akiva, b'moker. These are attempts to explain the Tanaic controversy between Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Akiva. So at this point, we've come to the end of our long question of Leimo Ketanoi. Shmuel's teaching appears to be a Machlokes Tanoim. The Gemara says, Loi. Bidolo Shavi, a mashkon that's not worth the value of the loan, Kuliyama Leslu de Shmuel. Everyone agrees that we would not follow Shmuel's way. So that if it's not worth the value of the loan, no one is going to say that the loss of the mashkon will result in the loss of the chance to collect the loan, that he can't collect the loan whatsoever. So then, if there's agreement regarding a mashkon that is not the value, so what are they arguing about? So the Gemara continues, V'hacha b'deshavi shiur zuzi. We're dealing with a mashkon that is actually worth the value of the loan. Just before we go ahead, structurally, one should realize then that as far as Shmuel is concerned, he has his opinion, but it's not based on these Tanoim. These Tanoim aren't discussing the case that Shmuel dealt with. So, we're telling you that the Machlokes Tanoim is in fact regarding a mashkon worth the value of the loan. Then, of course, everyone's wondering how, or based on what is Rebbe Eliezer saying, that even if it's lost, he can still collect his entire loan. So the Gemara says, "Ubederivso komiflegi." The Machlokes Tanoim surrounds Rav Yitzchok's teaching. The Omer Rav Yitzchok, minayin the bal choiv shekoine mashkon. From where do we know that the lender of a loan who receives a mashkon is said to acquire the mashkon? He is thought to be the owner of the mashkon. Shinemar, the pasuk says in Dvorim, Perek Chof Dalet, pasuk Yud Gimel, L'luchot Yet Stoka. The Torah there is describing a person who extended a loan, and he has a mashkon that he got from the borrower. He should give the mashkon to the borrower for his use in the meantime. The the psukim describe giving it to him to use during the daytime, and he'll vice versa, or give it to him, give the mashkil, let's imagine it's pajamas, give it to the borrower to use at night, and in the morning he'll return it to the lender. And for that type of behavior, the lender, for providing the borrower with the use of that very mashkon, he's given credit as having done tzedaka. Imeino kone mashkon, if the lender is not viewed as having acquired the mashkon, tzedaka minayin lo, why would the Torah give him credit for having performed an act of charity? You can't do an act of charity with someone else's things. With your own things, you can perform an act of loving kindness, an act of charity. And the pasuk clearly says that the lender, by giving the mashkon to the borrower for use during several hours of the 24-hour day, he is given credit as having done an act of charity. So, mikan lebal choyf shekoyne mashkon. From here we conclude, says Rav Yitzchok, that the Balchov, the lender, is said to have acquired the mashkon. Now, that's all very nice, but we have to tie that or plug that information back into the machloikas tanoim between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Kiva. So, simply stated, first off, Rabbi Elazar does not hold from Rabbi Yitzchok's analysis. Rabbi Yitzchok said that the lender is said to have acquired the mashkon. Rabbi Elazar will tell you that the lender is merely a shoimer chinam, an unpaid bailey with regard to the mashkon. His obligations are no more than a shoimer chinam. And what is the rule of a shoimer chinam? The rule of a shoimer chinam is that if the item that he is entrusted with gets lost, he can swear and does not have to pay. And as such, we understand that Rebbe Elazar says, if the mashkon is lost, as unfortunate as that may be, he can swear that it got lost and still collect his loan. The Gemara asks, Lema du Reb Yitzchok Tanoihi? Should we say that Reb Yitzchok's teaching is actually the subject of a machlokes tanoim? That is something that we find throughout the Shas, that an accepted teaching, Rav Yitzchok, we're going to assume, is an Amora that taught this principle that Baal Choyv Kena Mashkon, he wouldn't want to say something that is not unanimously accepted by Tanoim. But the way we're explaining things now, we're saying that only Rabbi Kiva would subscribe to that. But Rabbi Elazar in the Tanaic source doesn't subscribe to that. Meaning, as we saw, just to say what we said already, Rabbi Elazar says, the lender doesn't acquire the mashkon, the lender is just a shomer chinam on the mashkon. It's not his. Just like a shomer who receives an entrusted article to watch, the entrusted item doesn't become his. Likewise, the lender doesn't acquire the mashkon, and yet Rabbi Yitzchok says the lender does acquire the mashkon. So what are we to make of this? So the Gemara responds, V'tisbara, explain yourself. Eimor diomer Rabbi Yitzchok shemishkinoi shaloi b'shas halva. Rabbi Yitzchok said his principle regarding a lender that receives the mashkon at a time later than the loan was initially extended. It's regarding those circumstances that the posuk ulechot yetzdoka in Dvarim Perichov Dalid posuk Yud Gimel appears. Rashi proves that because the psukim just before that posuk Yud Aleph, it describes how this Balchov, how this lender got the mashkon, was through court intervention. The Shliach Beis Din went to the borrower's house while the lender was waiting outside, and he got the mashkon. But the Gemara goes on. Mishkeno b'shas havo mi omar. Did Rabbi Yitzchok say his principle with regard to a mashkon extended at the time of the loan? Ella. So we see here there are two different categories and sets of rules as they apply to collateral, mashkons. Ella mishkeno shaloi b'shas havosai, a mashkon acquired later than the initial loan. Kuleamalo pligi de islahu de Rabbi Yitzchok. Everyone, even the Tana Rabbi Lezer, will agree with Rabbi Yitzchok's principle. V'hocha b'mishkeno b'shas havoso u'b'shoimer aveda komifligi. Here we're dealing with a mashkon given to the lender at the time of the initial loan. And we're going to parallel this scenario with the legal obligations of one who watches an item that he found until he actually returns it to the owner. Until you return the avedo. The avedo is the lost article that you found. In the meantime, while you're holding on to it, you're a shomer. You're guarding the lost article. We're going to introduce shortly the concept of performance of a mitzvah. And how do we view one who is performing a mitzvah that concerns an item? Here we have the return of a lost article. There's the item in question, and you are guarding it. And there is this element of mitzvah that appears, it's featured. And we'll talk about the extension of a loan as a type of mitzvah. The Gemara. Here we're talking about, now we're at the third stage of explanation of the Machlokes Tanoim. B'mishkeno b'shas havoso u'b'shomer aveido komifligi. And as we said, we're going to have to, we'll first study the issue of a Shomer Aveda and then superimpose this information onto our case of the Mashkon that was extended at the time of the loan. The Itmar Shomer Aveda, Rabo Omar Keshomer Chinom. We continue at the top of Mem Dalet Amid Beis, Rav Yosef Omar Keshomer Socher Domi. We have a machlokas amoroyim. What legal obligations are upon someone who is caring for a lost article before it gets back to its original owner? Rabbo says his obligations are similar to that of an unpaid shomer. We've said before that means that in the case of theft or loss, there is exemption. Only in the case of negligence would there be obligation to compensate. And Rav Yosef, who appears at the top of Amud Beis, says that he is like a Shomer Sochar. And why is he like a Shomer Sochar? So using Rashi's explanation, at the top, Kesher Mesochar Domi, at the top of Mem Dalet Amud Beis, Schar Mitzvah. How is he getting paid? It's a lost item that he found. No one's paying him, but he gets the pay or the reward of fulfilling a mitzvah is viewed as his payment. Rashi continues, Umalve al hamashkoin nami mitzvah ovid. One who is willing to lend money to his friend in exchange for a mashkon is also performing a mitzvah. So while the loan is in progress, while the loan remains outstanding, you're holding on to the mashkon, which you received, which you might want to even say generated the loan. So it's part of the mitzvah. And as such, if it gets lost or stolen, so that would be the opinion of Rabbi Akiva that and assuming, of course, we're talking about the mashkon that's worth the value of the loan, so you thereby lose your loan. The mashkon had the value of the loan, and with its loss or theft, you would have to pay for that item. And in this case, you had extended a loan. The loan then is compensation, is payment for the mashkon that you lost. The Gemara asks, well, if having said that, Lema de Rav Yosef Tanoihi, are we then to say that the opinion of Rav Yosef that a Shomer Aveda is a Shomer Socher is a Machlokes Tanoim? And what that would mean then is only Rabbi Akiva would accept that the mitzvah is the payment for this particular Shomer. We saw Rabbi Elezer wouldn't seem to agree with that. So is Rav Yosef's opinion, now let's just emphasize that Rav Yosef said his opinion in the context of a Shomer Aveda, someone's watching a lost article. When you're watching a lost article, you don't get any benefit from it. You're watching it. So it would seem at this point that Rav Yosef is an opinion, an Amora's opinion, that fits into Rabbi Akiva's scheme of things, not Rabbi Elazar's scheme of things. Rashi points out that Rabba's opinion, that a Shomer Aveda is viewed as only a Shomer Chinam, is definitely a Machlokes Tanoim. And there's like nothing we can do about that. Namely that Rabbi Akiva would be in opposition, we'll say, to what Rabba holds, and Rabba then finds the basis for his opinion in the form of Rabbi Eliezer alone. But our question right now is, what about Rav Yosef? Do we have to say that Rav Yosef is also a Machlokes Tanoim? So here the Gemara responds and says, no. Loi. But Shomer Aveda Kulei Alma is Lehud Rav Yosef. When it comes to the watching of an actual lost article, everyone agrees with Rav Yosef that the Shomer of an Aveda is like a Shomer Socher, and his payment is the mitzvah of watching the caring for the lost item. So if Shomer Aveda is a point of unanimity, then where is there a machlokes between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Akiva? Ve'hocha b'malvet sorach l'mashkon komiflagi. The machlokes between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Akiva concerns a case involving a lender who lends the money, and he actually needs the mashkon and is going to use the mashkon. And of course, in the use of the mashkon, there's value to the lender in that use, and that amount would be knocked off from the original loan. We look at Rashi, the fourth line from the top. Tzorach l'mashkon l'shtamish bo. He needs the mashkin, and he's going to use it. And he'll subtract from the original loan the value of the rental of this particular mashkon, this article, this collateral. Rabbi Eliezer Sovar, Kevon de Tzorach LeMashkon, since he needs the mashkon, ain't kan mitzvah. You don't have a performance of a mitzvah per se. Ulanoson is gaving. This Malva extended the loan with his own interest in mind, Vavik Shomer Chinam. And he is therefore viewed as a Shomer Chinam. There's no mitzvah to serve as reward, as payment to the lender. And if anything, the lender is paying out, so to speak, subtracting from the principal of the loan. For Bikiva Sovar Kevan de Poche Solov Vaholech, since the lender is in fact getting less and less of the principal of his loan, mitzvah he. For lo havi olav ella kishomer sochar. There is a mitzvah element, and therefore he is considered a shomer sochar. And as a Shomer Socher, so if anything happens to the mashgon, if it gets lost, so he loses the principal, he loses his loan. So now we go back to the Gemara, which is very terse. The third line from the top, we read our fourth diamond, fourth attempt to explain the machlokas tanoim. V'ochad b'malvit tzorch l'mashkon k'mifligi, mar sovar mitzvah kovid. Rabbi Akiva views the lender, nevertheless, even though he's getting benefit from it, but nevertheless, he is performing a mitzvah. And therefore, he's like a shomer sochar, which carries with it the heavy obligation or responsibility in the event that it gets lost. Umor Safar, Rabbi Eliezer says, no, there's no element of mitzvah. The whole thing was self-interest, personal interest, lav mitzvah kovid. And therefore, he has the status of a shomer chinom. This, by the way, is on the heels of what the Gemara said just before this, that if you're dealing with someone that's clearly in a functioning in a mitzvah capacity, with an item that figures in the case, like a shomer aveda, he certainly is a shomer sochar, with the heavy responsibility that accompanies it. Of course, everyone is clear on the point that what we tried to do before with regard to Shmuel and the loss of a symbolic type mashgon, resulting in the loss of the entire loan to be collected by the lender, we got off that topic. We got off that discussion. Was that opinion, the opinion of Shmuel, was not the machlokes tanoim between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. However, Lema Katanoi, can we say that Shmuel's din is the subject of another machlokes tanoim? On the side of the Gemara under the Nosei, the topic heading, you can see we've written machlokes tanoim. Be'ezin esibus amrinon tamalve ala mashkoin ein shvius mishametes. Under what circumstances will we say that a loan that's extended in exchange for a mashkoin, whereas in general the seventh year of the sabbatical cycle, upon its completion, the end of the seventh year of the Shemitah cycle, cancels loans. That's called mishametes. That's a Torah principle. There are rabbinic laws that accompany this area of halacha, but we're not going to get into that. We're sticking to the strict Torah level understanding of Shemitah. At the conclusion of the Shemitah year, loans are canceled. When we say loans are canceled, that means that a malve that was attempting or that had not yet collected his loan, upon the conclusion of the Shemitah year, he can no longer collect it. However, if we could, in our mind's eye, say that prior to the end of the Shemitah year, the Malva, in effect, already collected his loan, that might be in a case where a Malva received a Mashkon. So then, the completion of the Shemitah year would not have any effect on him. Why? Because he already collected his loan, and maybe he would want to then exchange the mashkon that he had with the lover, who would then give him the cash value of the loan. I understand that what we just said might sound a bit abstract, but it certainly is enough to get us into the upcoming discussion. The Gemara. Lema ketanoi. Can we say that Shmuel's halacha concerning the symbolic type mashkon is a machlokas tanoim? Now, what was Shmuel's din? That if the symbolic type mashkon was lost, the axe handle, if you recall, then the lender who lost the mashkon cannot collect his loan anymore. So now we read the source. Notice that we have a long marking. This is basically a long question. Can we say that Shmuel is a machlokes tanoim? Hamalves chavero la mashkoin, v'nichnasa shmita. Person extended a loan, received collateral, and the shmita year set upon us. Afalpi she'enu shove ela palga. Even if the collateral is worth no more than half the loan. Eino mishame divrei Rab Shimon ben Gamliel. Here we're just going to translate, but the Gemara will clarify later. So the source is telling us that even though the mashkon is worth only part of the value, half the value of the original loan, shmita does not cancel. Rab Yehuda Anosi Oimer, im hoya mashkonei keneged chayvoi eino mishame. If the mashkon is worth the entire value of the loan, then the shmita does not cancel the loan. V'im lav, if the mashkon is not worth the value of the loan, mishamet, then shmita cancels. The Gemara now clarifies. My eino mishamet gomer tanakama. What does that mean? That a mashkon that's not worth the value of the loan, so shmita does not cancel. And here we go through several stages. That's what the triangle marking represents. Several stages, we say on the side, we note it under the mivne heading, shlovim lasbir machlokes hanal bein shmulio rebida nosi binyan mashkon chelki shenush b'shovi kol avo v'yacholto l'afsher gvias achov. And its ability, this mashkon's ability, to enable him to collect the debt even after shmita. So the Tanakama, namely Rav Shmuel Gamliel, said that the mashkon received makes it such that shmita doesn't cancel. What do you mean that shmita doesn't cancel? In lema kenegdoi, that shmita doesn't cancel the value of the loan that's equal to this mashkon that has partial value of the initial loan. What would that mean then? That if the loan was $1,000 and he received a mashkon of $500, so the Tanakhama is saying that even with the passage of the Shemitah year, the lender can still collect $500 in exchange for the mashkon. Well, Michlal, the Reb Yehuda Anosi Sofar, this would leave us to then understand that Reb Yehuda Anosi is of the opinion, Kenegdoi Nami Meshamet. Reb Yehuda Anosi said that this idea of Eino Meshamet is only when the mashkin is worth the entire value of the loan. But if it's not worth the entire, it's worth half the loan, then Shemitah cancels. So Reb Yehuda Anosi is saying that the lender won't be able to collect even the 500 that equals the value of the mashkon. In other words, the malva won't collect anything. Well, my toughest mashkon, then why did he take a mashkon? The simple understanding at this point is, if a person's going to take a mashkon, it's basically a vehicle that enables him to collect after the passage of the Shemitah year, at least collect something. Elolav keneged kulo. The Tanakhama said that if you have a mashkon that's worth only part of the value of the original loan, the Tanakhama of Shmuel Gamliel said, Eino Meshamet, the loan is not canceled. You can collect the entire loan. So you have a symbolic mashkon enabling you to collect the entire loan. So we have this relationship between partial mashkon is representative of the entire loan. And Reb Yehuda Anosi says, no, the part of the value of the loan that this mashkon represents, that and only that is what you're able to collect after Shemitah. Ubedish Shmuel Komiflagi. Ah, and this is the end of our long question. And it would then appear that Shmuel's analysis is their point of controversy. So that the Tanakama, namely Rav Shmuel Leal, would represent the opinion that agrees with Shmuel's analysis. Namely, that a partial value mashkon has relevance with regard to the entire loan. The Gemara says, lo, that's not the analysis. Li'oilom kenegdo. When the Tanakhama said that Shemitah does not cancel a loan where there is a mashkon that is only of partial value, it means that with the mashkon having partial value, that is the amount of loan that the lender can collect after, even after the Shemitah year. And Rabbi Yehuda Anossi says that even that amount he won't be able to collect. We asked before then, why in the world, according to Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, did he even take the mashkon? Ubehokom iflagi. Tanakama sovar kinegdo. The Tanakama holds that he can collect the amount that's the equivalent of the mashkon. In other words, Shemitah does not cancel the amount of the loan worth the mashkon. Rabbi Yehuda Anossi sovar kenegdo nami mishamet, and Rabbi Yehuda says that even that amount, that is the equivalent, the amount of the loan that is matched by the mashkon, he, the lender, nevertheless cannot collect even that. And you'll ask, well, according to Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, why then did the lender even bother holding a mashkon, realizing that's not going to help him collect after Shemitah? The answer to that is lezichron dvorim ba'alma. He received the mashkon as a means of reminding him that he had extended a loan, and up till the end of Shemitah, he could still legally collect the loan. Say, means of reminding him, zichron dvorim ba'alma. But as far as setting Shmuel up as a machlokes tanoim, as you can see, that is not that was not accomplished over here. That none of these tanoim are saying that a partial value mashkon is the equivalent of the entire loan. Before we conclude, as you can see, we were zoicha to finish the sixth perek of Perek Shavuos Hadayonim, and Mitzvah Shem, in our next shiur, the shiur for Daf Yomi Mem Dalet, will begin from here, Mem Dalet and Beis, the beginning of the new perek, the seventh perek, Kol HaNishboyim. Before we conclude, let us once again remind you that if you wish to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.